That's good. And welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody. And of course, joining me, my lovely wife, Audrey, is here.
Hello, everybody.
All right. So last week, we finally got that episode out to you over the weekend. So we hope you enjoyed Common Phrases Part 4. That was a lot of fun. I always like the Common Phrases episodes. They're always very interesting. And I missed a lot.
Yeah, those ones were good ones.
Yeah, I was like, I can't believe I missed like that many that were very common. And then our one uncommon one, again, given to us by Doug. So that was really cool.
We actually used it.
What did
Kennedy do? She like threw everything off the table.
Outside on our little glass patio table on the deck, she was throwing off like my phone, and she threw off like a couple other things.
She likes to throw things.
Yeah, so I said, oh, good. Kennedy just read the table.
Yep. She did not put everything back on, you know, 10-month-old. Can't expect her to do that. But
no, she just threw all that shit off. She was, fuck this. I'm out.
I'm out.
So we're coming back at you with a timely episode here on Thursday morning. Whew. What are you drinking over there?
I am drinking. So we have all these random ass beers in our basement fridge. Because what you did like a beer exchange.
Yeah, at work there were six of us guys that would gather in the parking lot after school, and we would exchange six packs. So everyone got their own beer, and then the five others that everyone else bought. So it was pretty cool. It's like make your own six pack, but with six of us guys doing that in a high school parking lot.
So this is a Kentucky Vanilla Barrel Cream Ale. It is aged in oak bourbon barrels. And I mean, I like anything that's in a bourbon barrel, like wine and bourbon. So
is
I decided
good?
To try this. Yeah.
Does it have like a vanilla flavor?
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's like a cream soda, but beer.
Oh, okay.
Would you like to try it?
Yeah, let me take a sip. Oh, yeah, 100%. That tastes like something you get from, like, an ice cream shop.
Yeah. It's interesting.
That's actually really good.
I don't know. He was like, I was like, what's in there that I'll drink? And he's like, oh, White Claw. I'm like, well, I can't drink those because I get headaches now after just one. Breastfeeding mom over here.
Whoop, whoop.
And then he said, oh, there's High Noons. And I was never a High Noon drinker before pregnancy, which is, you know, neither here nor there. But I was like, no, like, I really have gotten to like some beers. So I was like, no, like a beer. What beer can I drink? So this is what I'm still picky with them, but yeah.
Yeah, that one's actually, that's really good. I didn't expect it to taste like that. And
yeah,
if any of the guys listen to my podcast, he'd be like, you haven't drank any of that yet?
No, he hasn't drank like any of the beers that he's been given.
No, I drink a lot of the stouts because the stouts were really good. And like we did this exchange usually between like September and like December, January, and like, a couple of the guys are big stout guys, and like that's stout season. Like when it's cold, stouts are really good because you get the coffee stouts, the milk stouts, chocolate stouts. Like those are really good. I think I just hammered all those. But then there's some fruity ones that I was like, I guess I could try these, but like if I open it and I don't like it, I'm just going to dump it out.
Yeah, or like the IPAs. You're not a big
IPA
drinker.
I'm not an IPA
drinker.
No, IPAs, and I know there's a lot of fans of IPAs out there. It's too hoppy for me. I like to just drink beer that tastes good. And the IPAs, like, people are like, oh, that's so good. Like, you have one or two of them, that's fine. I'll have an IPA, like, if there's nothing else to drink. But at the same time, like, they're just too heavy for me. Like, I'm not a big fan of that, so.
So what are you drinking, then?
So I have another one of these. It's Empirical Brewery. It's called Prairie Pollinator Honey Wheat Lager. And it's very good. And it's got, like, its logo is, like, on the, what do you call that? The science,
oh, my God.
Element table.
The element table, yeah.
Table of elements. Yeah, it's kind of cool. It says P.O., Prairie Pollinator. And it's really good. It's definitely honey-like. Take a sip of that, because I think you'll like that, too. It's very, like, it's sweeter.
Oh.
Oh, no?
Mm. Oh. Maybe because I'm...
Maybe the mix with the vanilla wasn't good.
I don't know about that.
Like to me, this tastes like a shandy. Like it's sweet and it's
Yeah, I think like it might be mixing drink. With what I'm drinking.
Yeah.
They're two very different things.
But this is like the first time we're drinking something different.
I know.
We haven't drank whiskey in a while on the podcast.
On the podcast, yeah.
But I think it's because it's summer. And like I think like when it's hot, like whiskey just doesn't sound like
no.
Whiskey's good, don't get me wrong, and I love it all the time. But when it's hot out, I'm like, I'd rather have beer.
Yeah.
You know? It's just whiskey's like too heavy and potent for being like hot.
Yeah. Like, and I
want that when it's comfortable outside.
I never thought, because they were like, oh, you know, beer is an acquired taste. Like, I didn't drink beer in college. I didn't drink beer in high school either. But, like, I didn't like beer until I was pregnant. I, like, craved a beer. Like, a Spotted Cow or a Shandy or a Blue Moon. And now that is what I would prefer to have over, well, I've tried White Claw and they just give me an immediate headache. But I don't know. Now I have acquired that taste at almost 33 years old.
Congratulations. Welcome to the club. Only took 33
but
years.
But, like, I can't, like, just have a Busch Light or a Coors Light. I don't want that shit. Yeah.
It's not shit.
It's
God's gift to the world. How about a Molson Canadian?
I don't think I've ever tried that.
Labatt
probably
Blue.
Probably not.
You'd hate them.
Nope, probably not.
They're so good, though.
I need something with, like, a little sweetness or a little flavor, not just straight beer.
After I play hockey tonight, I'll have a couple of Molsons with Rob and Mike.
Well, you enjoy that.
That's what we get. We get Molson buckets at the rink, so. All right, well.
Let's get into it.
What we're bringing to you today is I'm bringing a new theme to the podcast.
Oh, you're just bringing all the themes. Okay.
You know, we're a fresh podcast. We're on our, this is our 18th episode.
Okay.
And, you know, the first, like, 8 or 9, right, we did the whole horse soldiers thing, obviously, and then we had, like, these specific historical events and stuff, and then I decided to switch it over to these themes.
Yeah.
And so I'm just fine, you know, I'm going to do, I want to go into these themes because, like, I can connect historical events with these themes, and we'll have episodes on episodes on episodes, right? I don't have to just research one historical event. I can do a couple in a sitting.
Yeah, for sure.
Which brings, I think, more entertainment and more knowledge to the people. This theme is called History's Disasters.
Oh.
And who doesn't like a good disaster?
Yeah, I do.
You know, I was about to do Chernobyl.
Oh,
and I'm like, everyone knows Chernobyl.
Yeah,
like the biggest nuclear disaster in human history, except I guess you can argue the atomic bombs back in World War II, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But like history's disasters, like disasters in history that you've probably never heard about, right? That's this whole the whole point of our podcast is like that lesser known history.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept looking at these like different disasters. I was like, man, it's like a car crash, right? You just can't look away from this stuff. So it's like this stuff is supposed to get you excited.
Okay, I'm excited. Woohoo!
All right. The first... Woohoo! Let's go. Dead people.
Okay, well, I'm not going to woohoo about that.
No,
but.
I know. I'm just being overdramatic. The first one is called the Halifax Explosion.
Okay.
Do you know where Halifax is?
I have an idea in my head, but I don't think I really want to say it.
Okay, what's your number one guess? You get 3 guesses.
Oh, okay.
3 guesses.
In Nova Scotia.
Oh, wow.
That area.
You are really specific. When you said, I don't want to guess, I thought you were like going to guess a country way far away. Like, I would have taken Canada.
Oh, Canada. Okay.
Halifax, Nova Scotia. That's exactly the province. Yeah.
It was
that's
right?
The province. Yeah.
Oh.
100%.
That was the first thing that came to mind.
Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. Okay. Yeah. I thought,
I don't know where my brain went with that one.
No,
but.
you looked at me like, I don't want to guess. And then I was like, where are you going with this? I thought you were going to say somewhere like, I don't know, like Russia or maybe like Europe or something. And you were like, Nova Scotia. And I was like,
oh,
I would have taken Canada.
I must have heard that somewhere before.
Good.
Obviously.
Well, Halifax. Well, yeah, Halifax is a big hockey town. There's a lot of NHL players from Halifax and they have a lot of junior teams out in Halifax. But yeah, Halifax, Nova Scotia is where we're talking about. The Halifax explosion. It's one of the most catastrophic events in Canadian history, let alone world history. And it's really something that not a lot of people talk about that hasn't really made it into like mainstream history. But I think if you studied Canadian history, you would find this somewhere. This happened in 1917 at the end of World War One. And it was very impactful. We're going to talk about the impact it had, the legacy it left behind in Canada. But Halifax back in 1917 is a very vibrant, bustling port city. It's right on the coast of Nova Scotia. A lot of shipping goes in and out of Halifax, still does today. Big port city. And this is at the height of World War I in 1917, where it was about to come to an end. So, like, it's at its height because it's coming to an end, right? It's not slowing down, but it's coming to that pinnacle to where the war is almost over. And Halifax is a very strategic location in Canada for the war effort. It's a gateway for troops, supplies, and warships. So being, like, right off the Atlantic, mm-hmm. right, it's easy to ship right over to Europe. Yeah. I mean, that's really not a long trek from mm-hmm. Canada to Europe, just under Greenland, if we're talking geographically, over the Atlantic. So it's a very prominent city, especially at this time when troops and supplies and warships are being shipped over. On the morning of December 6, 1917, the city is going to witness this disaster of unimaginable proportions. It begins with two ships converging in the Halifax harbor. There's a French cargo ship, the SS Mont Blanc, and the Norwegian vessel, the SS IMO. Around 8:45 in the morning, the two ships collide in a narrow section of the harbor that's known as literally the Narrows. So, like, the inlet into Halifax Harbor from the ocean is a very narrow point where ships have to really navigate this deeper water where they're allowed to travel and not go too far out to the shorelines because they'll ground.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So the Mont Blanc, it's carrying, the French ship, it's carrying a highly volatile cargo. It's filled with explosives that are bound for the war in Europe, including picric acid, TNT and benzol, so very highly explosive materials, mm-hmm. gasoline, that kind of stuff. Now, the collision obviously causes sparks to fly, igniting a fire aboard the Mont Blanc, and the crew, knowing that the ship is so dangerous, they abandon it right away.
Yeah,
like right
they're
when
like, this can blow up.
Right when this impact happens, they're like, nothing good can come of this. They start to row to shore in their safety boats mm-hmm. over the side. So the ship is pretty much a floating time bomb, yeah. and it's floating towards the busy waterfront of Halifax.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. As the Mont Blanc starts to burn, there's obviously a crowd that gathers to watch. Like I was saying, a car crash, right? Like you can't look
watch.
Away from it. Everyone's like, oh my God, what's happening? But it's coming closer
and
to
and they
them.
Have no idea what's on this
they
boat.
You have no idea. Like even when you see ships today, you're like, oh cool, cargo containers. But there could be nuclear materials on there. You have no idea, right? So they all gather around. This crowd gathers around. And 9:04 a.m., boom. The Mont Blanc explodes with a force equivalent to 2.9 kilotons of TNT, making it one of the largest non-nuclear explosions in the history of the world.
Oh.
Now, the blast flattened buildings, shattered windows up to 50 miles away, and created a shockwave that was felt miles away.
Uh-oh.
In an instant, approximately 2,000 people were killed, and 9,000 more were injured. And the explosion obliterated what's called the Richmond District of Halifax and caused severe damage across the city and beyond. The Richmond District is like the very populous area where like the shops are, where the like where the restaurants would be, like mm-hmm. that kind of area. So there's a lot of people there. And it just, this explosion is so heavy, it just plows over this whole area.
That's not good.
Now, amid this chaos, there's stories of heroism and tragedy that emerge. One notable hero is a man named Vince Coleman. He's a railroad dispatcher who stayed at his post to send a warning message to an incoming train, saving countless lives at the cost of his own. Oh, so he stayed at this post where the explosion happened just off the shoreline because mm-hmm. the trains come up the shore there, and a passenger train was coming into Halifax, and he halted the train because of the explosion. And there's just fire and chaos happening. Jeez. So he saves a lot of lives just by halting this train. Now, help pours in from across Canada and beyond. Boston, Massachusetts played a significant role in the relief efforts. They sent a lot of people up from Boston. because that's one of the closest American cities with a high population. So they sent a lot of like firemen, 1917, first responders that we would call them today, to help out in Halifax. And now Halifax sends a Christmas tree to Boston every year, which is a tradition that continues to this day because of this tragedy.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so that was one of the really cool things that I found in the story, was that because Boston back then had sent all these people to help with the recovery efforts and try and rebuild the city of Halifax, that Halifax and Boston have this really cool relationship where Halifax always sends them a their like city Christmas tree.
That's amazing. Every year.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So the Halifax explosion absolutely changes Halifax forever. It led to improvements in emergency responses and urban planning. It left an indelible mark on the community. Oh, it leaves this mark on the community that they'll always remember.
Yeah.
Because of how significant their community is to the Canadian economy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of memorials and annual ceremonies that ensure that the victims and the resilience of the people of Halifax are never forgotten. And then if you look at the Halifax explosion, you're reminded of just how something so small, right, mm-hmm. can become something so big that impacts such a, like, there's not a lot of big cities in Canada, right? Yeah. But there's a lot of, like, medium-sized cities in Canada, like Halifax, that are very important, like I said, to the traditions of Canada, mm-hmm. to the culture of Canada, to the economy of Canada, and that's what Halifax really is.
Yeah.
And that, like, you think of, like, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Edmonton,
Vancouver,
even Calgary, Winnipeg, right? I just named all the hockey teams. like, seriously, and that's what it is. Those are hockey. The NHL markets are in those big cities where, like, they have a lot of business and things like that. You need to remember, like, the smaller communities of Canada or the middle-sized communities of Canada, that, like, these people are also very intricate to the culture and the existence of Canada.
Sure.
So I thought this was a pretty cool story. Like I said, we keep these nice and short. There's not really much detail to go into here. But I thought the Christmas tree part was really cool, and that's
really
why I like the story.
That.
But that is a huge disaster in Canadian history that had a big impact on revitalizing, you know, shipping efforts, how the port is conducted, how emergency response is conducted there, understanding that, you know, shipping is not an easy gig.
No.
Right? You have floating vessels on the water, and you have to be very careful about what they're holding and making sure you have, like, a response crew in case something like that were to happen. Like, think about today. You look at the cruise ship sinkings, right, that have happened in Italy.
That, whatever that cargo ship was that brought that bridge down.
Yeah, oh, in Baltimore.
In Baltimore.
Yeah, just recently, a few months ago, in Baltimore, Maryland, in the U.S. for our non-U.S. listeners, oh my God.
It, like, lost power.
The Scott Key Bridge.
Francis
Scott Key, thank you.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. The guy who wrote our national anthem.
Okay, yeah. I was like, wait, is that what I'm thinking?
Yeah, the Francis Scott Key Bridge got hit by a cargo ship, and I think the whole world probably saw it on the news, but the cargo ship apparently lost power and couldn't steer.
Yeah.
And it hit one of the barriers on the bridge and took the whole thing down, and it's an icon to Baltimore. And obviously who it's named after is an icon to the United States. And that is actually one of their biggest bridges to where people can get back and forth from the city of Baltimore to outlying areas from where they work. And the port itself is a busy center for American industry. So, same thing with, like, this Halifax explosion, right? Like, those response efforts, like, luckily there was only 6 people that were killed in that.
Yeah,
accident.
I mean, it was a small number, but, like, still.
It's still,
because there was construction on the
bridge.
There
was construction workers on the bridge when it hit, and those people fell into the water, obviously, and it was late at night, and you can't see. So if you're not a good swimmer, as it is, there's all that chaos happening in the water and things falling around you.
Oh,
so
totally.
Who knows what happened? But, like, luckily, I mean, 6 people compared to 2,000.
Yeah.
Emergency efforts were there. They got people rescued off the ship and those kind of things, like that's really important. So Yeah, that's our first story.
So I've been like trying to think of like how I like so quickly said Nova Scotia, even though I was totally not thinking that that was accurate, is because this is how my brain thinks. Another Friends reference. It's when Ross is on the train
and he falls asleep, and that one girl's
like, "Oh, I'm from Nova Scotia." And I think she might say Halifax.
Next stop, Montreal.
And then he goes all the way up to Nova Scotia. And I think that's how I like thought of that.
There's Audrey again with the Friends. See, this is how...
life is a Friends reference.
This is how you learned was through Friends. That's how she knew the geography of Halifax being in Nova Scotia was because of Friends. That one scene. Next stop, Montreal.
Where am I?
All right.
Yeah, that's where my brain went.
Doesn't shock me at all.
Nope. All right. Anyway, next disaster.
All right. Our second disaster is called the Tunguska incident.
Oh.
This one is a little bit more mysterious.
Yeah. Where is this located?
Okay. Well, this one is in Russia.
Okay.
So, this is a very interesting incident. This happened on June 30th of 1908 in the remote wilderness of Siberia. So Siberia obviously being the frozen tundra of Russia where everyone gets exiled to when you don't like the Communist Party.
Bubble fuck Russia.
Exactly. The only people that live out in like the Siberia region are the natives who have learned to adapt and live there over thousands and thousands of years, if not tens of thousands of years.
Their lifestyle.
Correct. So Siberia is the tundra. It's very cold. If you don't know anything about Russia, it's like it's frozen desert wasteland.
Yeah.
And during World War II, this is where Stalin and the Communist Party sent their political opponents to pretty much die, was Siberia. Hmm. The sky lights up with a fireball that people claim was brighter than the sun. And it was followed by a deafening explosion that leveled an entire forest.
Uh-oh.
This remains one of the most powerful explosions in recorded history, but left behind no impact crater, no fragments of a meteorite, just flattened that forest and left people with countless questions.
Oh.
So this colossal blast flattened over 2,000 square kilometers of forest near, and I'm going to mess this up, but I think it's called the Podkamenaya. It's a very long word. Podkamenaya.
All right.
We're going with Podkamenaya.
Sounds good.
Okay. Tunguska River. And like that's like an indigenous name right there.
Yeah.
Both of those. Sounds like it. Podkamenaya and Tunguska are very indigenous Russian words.
Yes.
This river or this forest that gets leveled is near this river, and there's a shock wave that is felt as far away as Britain.
Oh my God, that's far.
That's a large explosion.
If Britain?
Yes, because remember, Siberia is like central Russia. Russia's freaking huge. And like Moscow and Britain are probably, I want to say, if you took a plane ride from Britain to Moscow, I'd say 4 hours tops.
A plane ride. That's far.
Exactly. And that's like,
like New York to California.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is like, to feel a shockwave from the middle of Siberia all the way through Eastern Europe to Britain, the island of
Moscow's
of Britain,
on like the very far west side, right?
East side. No, I'm sorry. No, west side. Yes. You're right. West side. Furthest west side near Eastern Europe. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that's far to feel a shockwave from. Eyewitnesses described a fireball streaking across the sky, followed by a series of thunderous explosions and a wave of heat that could be felt from miles away. And to understand what might have caused this massive explosion, you need to go back to the early 20th century. Despite the global impact, it wasn't until 1927, nearly two decades later, that the first scientific expedition, led by Russian mineralogist, led by Russian mineralogist Leonid Kulik, ventured into the Siberian Tianga to investigate. So this is like the first time someone from Russia has actually taken an expedition to this forested area to take a look at what happened. What Kulik and his team found was astonishing. Trees scorched and knocked down in a radial pattern, as if a giant hand had pressed them flat to the earth. But there was no crater, no meteorite fragments, just an eerie, devastated landscape.
So you're thinking aliens, right?
Every time. I'm thinking freaking laser beams from space.
Freaking laser beams.
There's aliens with freaking laser beams on their head shooting them from space.
No, it's sharks.
I know that. I know that. It's just funnier if it's aliens in this.
I think it's really funny if it'd be sharks. Yeah. I mean,
there's sharks with freaking laser beams shooting them from space. Don't get people started, because they made those Sharknado movies. Now they're going to start making those like shark alien movies where there's like shark aliens and shit. Yeah. So over the years, scientists have pieced together a likely explanation. The consensus today is that the Tunguska event was caused by the airburst of a meteoroid or comet fragment about 5 to 10 kilometers above the ground. That would explain why Britain would have felt the shockwave, because it was an aerial explosion. So just like a nuclear explosion, there's two types of nuclear explosions. There's one at the ground, right? And there's one in the air. Like, you can explode.
That mushroom cloud thing.
Well, no, mushroom cloud is when it hits the ground. Like Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those are the only two ever dropped in history, right?
Yeah.
Except outside of testing, actually used. Those are the mushroom clouds. They hit the ground and they explode.
Okay, yeah.
You can also explode a aerial nuclear device that umbrellas over an area. Like, that's terrifying. That's worse than a ground explosion. That's what this is kind of saying, is that like a meteorite or a comet entered Earth's atmosphere, heated up so much, it exploded 10 kilometers over the Earth and like made an umbrella over that area.
That space.
Exactly. To where Siberia got the brunt of it, because it was probably directly going at that point.
Yeah.
But that shock wave hit everything within this kind of dome.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
More so than aliens.
Exactly. The object, estimated to be 50 to 60 meters in diameter. So 50 to 60 meters in diameter. Like, think of like half a football field, maybe a little bit more. Okay. That's how big they think this thing was when it exploded in the sky.
See, I feel like that's like small.
It's not small.
In comparison to like things that are in space.
Yes, but it's not small when you consider gravity and the speed it's traveling at.
Yeah, I guess.
So think about this. Think about something two times the size of our house, lengthwise, right, and widthwise, like a big ball of our house, but there's two of them, okay? Think about this falling into Earth's atmosphere, okay, at that speed. It's going to cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, it's going to cause damage, for sure.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone to, I don't remember what state it's in, if it's Utah or Colorado or Arizona maybe, that big crater that actually did make a dent
There's
in the desert?
There's a lot of craters in the desert.
Well, this one like is a tourist attraction.
Oh.
I can't remember what state it's in. But I've gone to see it, and that is huge. Way more than 50 meters.
I'm trying to think of the name of it, and I can't think of the name of it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I can't remember. It was many, many, many years ago. But
it's probably the one that killed the dinosaurs, to be honest.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. Okay, it's not that big.
Are dinosaurs even real?
I don't know.
Well, they dug up their bones, so they had to have been real.
I would say dinosaurs are real. I don't believe in aliens, but...
Holy fuck.
I mean, I believe that there's
other
things
out there. Okay,
but
so this object was estimated between 50 and 60 meters in diameter. It entered the Earth's atmosphere at a tremendous speed, creating intense heat and pressure that caused it to explode midair, releasing energy equivalent to 10 to 15 megatons of TNT. This explosion was powerful enough to flatten the trees but not leave a crater because there was no object to actually hit the Earth's surface.
Yeah. So, like, dissipated.
So, the pressure coming from the explosion in the sky was enough to flatten those trees, but there was no actual impact of a physical meteorite or comet, whatever they think it was, astronomically, to make the indent in the Earth. Which actually, I mean, that makes the most sense, right?
Yes.
Without, like, jumping to conclusions of aliens and stuff like that.
For sure.
Okay, here we go. There's alternate theories. So, despite this scientific consensus, because everyone loves to challenge science, it's a fun thing to do. you go on Facebook and Instagram and all these science posts, you'll see all the, you know, crazy posts about what it could have been and people just freaking out about how you don't trust the science. It is what it is. So, Tunguska has also inspired many alternate theories.
Of course.
We're going to get there. Some have suggested that there was a natural gas explosion below the ground, a mini black hole. Wait, and here's my favorite, number three, an alien spacecraft crash.
There it is.
Dun, dun, dun. Come on. That'd be so cool. Just like Roswell.
I bet it would be cool.
Russia's Roswell.
But I don't know. My realist brain is like, I haven't seen it.
I'm going to tell you right now, it would not be cool. Those little fucking things would crash down to Earth, and they would be a nuisance. They would come and try and kill us all, and we'd be trying to shoot them, right? We'd be like...
And they won't die.
And they won't die because the bullet goes through them, and their skin just redevelops. Like, that's what's going to happen.
Like E.T.
Yeah. 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 They're just... There's no holes in them. They have nowhere to kill them.
No.
They just, the bullet goes right through them like they're freaking made of clay, and they just sucks back up, and then they come and dig your eyes out.
How we are possibly the only people in this whole entire existence and universe, it just can't be true. But those little green things walking around with their big ass heads, nope.
Where do you think do you think people got the idea of those from?
I don't know. Probably like some kid drew a picture and that was just what it was.
Oh,
in
yeah.
His mind.
Some kid just drew a picture like it was freaking Cookie Monster and all of a sudden aliens were developed.
How did they come up with Mickey Mouse?
I don't know. Listen.
Three circles.
Listen, I love you and I married you, but get the fuck out of here. This is ridiculous.
You will have to live with this until I see it with my own eyes.
All right. Anyway, these theories, while fascinating, lack the substantial evidence that supports the meteoroid airburst explanation. However, the enduring mystery and the sheer scale of the event continue to captivate the imagination. Because that's what we have, imaginations.
Exactly.
Imagination. I tried to say that like SpongeBob, but it was terrible.
Yeah, that was not a good SpongeBob voice.
So... The Tunguska incident holds a special place in the study of near-Earth objects and planetary defense. It's a reminder of the potential dangers posed by space rocks and the importance of monitoring the skies. Efforts to track and potentially deflect hazardous asteroids are ongoing, which I see all the time because I follow NASA and all their cool experiments.
Space duty.
Space duty.
Another Friends reference.
Yes, that's another Friends reference. And we hope to prevent actually, you know, any similar event like this from happening in a populated area, which is, what's one of your favorite movies?
One of my favorite movies?
Yeah.
That's related to
Armageddon?
This? That's one of my favorite movies? Okay, sure.
Maybe you just like the song at the end of Armageddon.
I mean, it's a good movie, but not one of my favorites.
Oh, because, like, I feel like we've talked about Armageddon before, and you're like, oh, I love the end of Armageddon, it's so sweet.
Well, I mean,
maybe that's me who thinks it's so sweet at the end.
I think so.
That he stays behind to save
well,
the
yeah,
Earth.
Yeah, and of course the song is great, but
if you don't know the song, you know the song. It's Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Oh. That's not it. I was about to start singing Google Dolls. Shit. And I don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah, that wonderful one. Song.
Yeah.
But no, not a favorite.
However. If you go look at NASA's website and all the cool stuff that they do with, like, asteroids and stuff, like, they can project asteroids passing Earth now, like, years before it happens, I believe. They track like the gravitational pull of Earth and the moon and all these different things. Like we had an asteroid pass by Earth not too long ago. I think it was in the last 2 years, and it was the closest asteroid, and it wasn't even close.
So far.
Right, exactly. They're like, this asteroid is about to pass a half light year away. And you're like, ooh, that's fucking far, man. Like, that is not close.
Not at all.
Light year ahead.
Close in, I guess, relatively,
it's relatively close and scary because it's an asteroid. And the last time an asteroid hit the Earth, the dinosaurs died. Jano. But, like, it's kind of cool to see, like, they have all this new research on, like, how to redirect asteroids and stuff like that using, like, you can use, like, satellites. They can use, like, these explosives in space they're working on. Like, not nuclear space explosives, force. But things to, like, reproject an asteroid's path away from Earth.
Yeah, because we have a space force.
Space force. Thanks, Donald Trump.
This is not a political podcast.
I didn't say I endorsed him.
We got people up there now.
I can't even run for president this year. I'm not 35 yet. Mm. Just turned 33.
Two more years.
So not this election. Four more years. Time. 4 more years, I'm in.
You should.
Cody Billick.
I'll put you on the ticket.
President 2024. Think about it, people. Think about it.
Might want to like start getting into politics now then.
No, I can't. No, it'll ruin our lives. I wouldn't do that to Kennedy.
Thanks.
No, I wouldn't. You're an adult. You can handle it. I would never do that to her as a child. That would be fucking awful. No.
I can hold my own.
You can hold your own. You tell people to fuck off. I would not do that to that little girl. She should not be ever subjected to that horror of our political system.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I would never get into
it. But we need some young blood.
We need young blood. This is not a political podcast. What the fuck are you doing? This is ridiculous.
Tangent.
Okay. Anyway, there's a cultural impact of the Tunguska. It's very significant. It has been featured in books, movies, and even video games, and often portrayed as a supernatural or extraterrestrial event. The blend of scientific intrigue and speculation fiction keeps the Tunguska incident alive in pop culture more than a century after it happened. So that's pretty cool. Like, they use it as, like, one of those things where, and you see this a lot, like, different historical events that have happened, they use them in video games all the time, or they do, like, a spin-off off of it where they make it, like, more dramatic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To make it into, like, a movie or a video game or, like, a book. Someone gets creative and writes, like, fiction about, like sci-fi
that's
fiction.
That's why they're all based on a true story. Cool. Yeah, based on more dramatics.
Yeah, absolutely. And who doesn't like dramatics? Or aliens coming down and trying to, like, take over Earth.
Totally.
God, that'd be so cool. For the record, I wouldn't want to subject my daughter to an alien invasion either, let alone politics. I'm pretty sure the alien invasion would be better than politics, though.
Probably.
Because I could, like, teach her how to shoot. And, like, if those fuckers go down when you shoot them, like, all right, we're good.
Yeah.
Politics? Nope.
No, yeah, you can't get away from that.
But this is really, like, this story was interesting to me because of how, like, you know, it's, like, one of those scientific stories where, like, they have an explanation for it now because our, like, technology is so much better and, like, it's mm-hmm. easier to make a theory that makes sense and you can study, like, these astronomical events of things like dropping from the sky and whatever.
Yeah.
But like, imagine living in the early 1900s and not like understanding what we know now.
Oh my God.
And this kind of thing happens to you and you're like, oh fuck.
What just happened?
Yeah. Like,
and there's no news outlet to say, oh, this is what's happening.
Well, by the way, leading scientists have said that this vaccine is going to work and you should all take it. I don't know where I was going with that.
I don't know either.
Sorry. I think my subliminal messaging in my brain just went to science and how I've been reading all these posts about how science is right. And
it's
you should
okay
always follow
to
the science,
question science.
And you should just shove a needle in your arm just because the scientist said so. But this is interesting because, like, yeah, I don't trust 100% of science. I question it because there's much to question. Just because
they don't even know.
No. There's a lot of science that's true. I mean,
oh, of course.
And that's been
yes.
proven, right? But when it comes to, like, when a scientist goes, oh, this is it, and another science, scientist like combats it, you're like, well, no, it's not it. So 100, like, science is not 100% true.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And this is like the type of event that like proves that is like in the early 1900s, you're like, oh, aliens. And then like in the, you know, 2024, we're like, no, it's not aliens. Like, there was probably a meteorite that exploded in the air. Yeah. And the pressure was so much. Like, we have a reason for why this happened.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing today with like science. You know, like, yes, there's science that is proven. I get it. I'm not saying science is stupid. I'm saying when the government funds science, yeah, then there's an issue.
Then there's a problem. But again, not a political
podcast. Okay, I'm gonna
get off your soapbox.
This is get off my soapbox. That's a good common phrase.
Oh, that is. Next one.
It is funny because like I had kids over summer school. Some of my juniors who are going to be seniors, they were like, "Bill, like, we've been listening to your podcast and we heard you talk about doing a podcast where you just go on political rants, and we think you should do it."
Oh,
and I
goodness.
Said, "Let me wait till I get tenure."
Yeah.
And then I will do my political rant podcast. To where I just go off for a freaking hour about things. And this podcast right now, I'm going to have to mark it explicit because I've said fucking at least 10 times today. And you know someone's going to be emailing me on my work email, "Mr. Billick needs to shut down his podcast because he says the bad words and he is not influential to our children."
Well, it's not for them.
No, this is for adults 18 and up.
So some...
Actually,
juniors,
I should say,
gonna be seniors, might be, well, they'll be turning 18.
No, they're mature enough, they don't care.
And I mean,
the only people,
the ones that listen to it aren't gonna,
the only people that complain are the parents.
Are the parents listening?
Yes.
To
I don't know. Yeah, I do have parent listeners.
Oh, nice.
But they like me, so they're not gonna
be
like, "Hey, shut your podcast down." They're gonna be like, "Yeah, go on your political rants." Yeah. Those listeners I have talked to about my podcast here, and they like it.
Yeah.
So
I could see that. It's not going so well, but that's just my head.
No, it'll go great. I'm a very moderate person.
You are. Yes, you are.
I'm a very moderate person, and I'm fair. And I just believe in reality and not delusional BS. So,
yes.
I think 95% of people would agree with me on most things.
Yeah.
Anyway. We need to end this.
Yes, we do.
Well, as always, thank you guys for listening to the History on the Rocks podcast. Our listeners are great, even if there's 28 of you every week. we're still trying to grow those numbers. We were at 38, and then we missed a week. And then, well, we didn't miss a week. We took a week off, and then last week we put out late. So hopefully our numbers start going up again.
Yay.
They kind of fell. But hopefully these stories are entertaining to you. We'll be back next week with another fun and exuberant episode.
That's a word.
Of History on the Rocks podcast. I hope you all have a good weekend. Go see some friends and family. Get some drinks in. Enjoy the nice weather. It's summertime.
Yes. It's actually your summertime now.
Yes. Summer school is over.
Summer school is over. I get a little break because...
You get a little break because...
Our system is switching over, so
right.
I can't do
so
my work.
That's all right. You've been working hard the last couple weeks, so you can use
I
a
have.
Break.
I could use a break.
All right, y'all. Have a wonderful weekend. We will be back next week to talk to you on History on the Rocks podcast. We'll see you later.
See ya. Cheers.
Cheers.